This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Debt related to education multiplied in U.S. households sixfold since 2001. And now an overwhelming majority of parents say they're willing to postpone their own retirements to help pay for their children's college. Is sacrificing your retirement savings for your children's education debt the right decision? Let's talk about it with wealth advisor and principal with Bartlett Wealth Advisors, Laura Humphrey. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And Wells Fargo financial advisor, Chris DeSimio. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks, Michael. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Indeed it is. Listeners are reminded the information provided on this show is general in nature and may not apply to your personal investment situation. But we do want to hear about your questions and concerns about this. So give us a call, 513-419-7100, or email your questions to talk@wvxu.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter as well. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those in the show as well. Laura and Chris, let's start with some statistics. The cost of a four-year private college averages about $48,500 a year. That's double from the 1980s. And in 2016, about 15 to 25% of 25 to 35-year-olds we're living at home. That's according to Pew Research. That's 5 points higher than Gen Xers at that age and double the rate of today's retirement age folks. So what in general is happening in terms of people's financial situation and college debt?
Well, what's happening is that a lot of times moms and dads and frequently grandparents will save money, put money aside for their children. Usually they start some kind of college savings account, generally a Section 529 plan, after the kids are born. And then as they approach college, the money is there, it gets used, and it quite frequently consumed through college. And so as you go more than halfway through school, then mom and dad or grandma and grandpa are paying for college. Maybe the kids are getting a job in the summertime, interning, getting some money, but it's an expensive proposition. And then if the job that is earned after college isn't enough to cover the student debt, then as Professor Harold Hill would say, there's trouble in River City. And the trouble starts compounding too, because some of the student loan providers are all too happy to say, to offer you a forbearance or a deferral. Just don't worry about paying us back yet. Meanwhile, the meter is running. And that's where trouble kind of starts to seep in. So it's because frequently, and maybe Laura has seen this a lot too in your practice, sometimes moms and dads don't communicate about the finances with their children. And so, you know, sometimes mom and dad will cover the cost of the student loan. Sometimes the kids will cover it and get in trouble. And trouble gets out of hand, out of control, and then, you know, more than it otherwise would need to. So these are the kind of the roots of this problem.
Well, I appreciate the Music Man reference. It's nice to get back to show tunes after 40 minutes of baseball, back to somewhere I'm a little more comfortable. So thank you
for that. Damn Yankees.
That's true. Yes. Absolutely. So it started with higher education because that's a major part of the role that children may be playing in the threat to their parents' retirement plans. But what is the right message for parents when they're considering financial aid to their college-age students?
Well, as Chris and I were talking briefly before we came in, our message, our advice, is much easier given than it is actually taken. Parents really want to help their children. They want to give them at least what they had, so at least a bachelor's education or more if the child finds that necessary. We're talking about, you know, child adults here. And parents oftentimes feel pretty good about their own finances at that stage in life because we've had 10 years of a bull market. So perhaps if they've got some investments, those look pretty good. Their house value has probably increased. So they're feeling like I've got some room here that I can help my children. The problem becomes, to Chris's point, that this balloons very quickly into significant debt. So I think you have parents that are really, really interested in helping their children at least achieve what the parent has achieved, even though the financial realities might tell you that's not necessarily a good financial decision.
You mentioned people's investments. Mm-hmm. You're talking then about people who have benefited from this robust economy that we've had over the past several years. The millennial generation may not have caught up quite yet to reaping the rewards of this robust economy. I mean, the millennials are almost 40 years old, keep in mind. And these are grown-ups now, fully fledged grown-ups with children of their own who are of a certain age. So is this current situation where Gen Xers and boomers with millennial children and college debt, is it a display that perhaps some people are being left behind by the current economic situation in the country?
That's a very good point. I do think that's true. You know, if you look at a lot of the, wage growth over the last 10 years has been fairly non-existent until recently. I mean, we've just seen some small increases of about 3%, which if you do the math is not really that much. You know, if you're making $40,000, 3% is $1,200. So these raises are, you know, you feel good about them, but they're not really stretching your budget. The price of things, houses, entertainment, all of the things that we like to do are costing more, and our wages have not kept up necessarily. And that's also dependent on the career that you choose. But that is just a fact that wages have fallen behind the cost of living.
Yeah, and it can be something that affects not just mom and dad or the kid. It frequently affects the whole family, and it ripples out from that. What really got me thinking about this was a cover story of Barron's about a month ago, the March 25th issue. It's called, the cover is The Parent Trap, and it's got mom and dad in their late 50s, early 60s, and they clearly just retired, and yet there's like a late 20-something laying across their laps in the couch looking at her cell phone.
Right. Or a 40-something.
And it just says, about. The parent trap, your kids could be ruining your retirement plans. Here's what to do about it. And the gist of the whole article was to communicate between the two generations to make sure that everyone is on the same page. You can see who's paying for what and what is a reasonable amount to expect and to afford, because most parents will move heaven and earth to help their kids, and sometimes they give them the wrong kind of help, and they're merely supporting bad habits.
And that's something I want to talk about as well, because we're considering people who are already dealing with this debt that's been taken on. So if there are high school age kids who are putting out those applications and trying to get to a school, you know, I think back to my own exploration of where to go to school and a lot of opportunities, but my parents made a deal with me that if I went to Northern Kentucky, stayed close to home, they would pay for all of it. But that was cheap also, you know, it was a relatively inexpensive gift, very nice of them, but inexpensive compared to where some of the places that I could have gone. How do you recommend parents address, maybe you don't go to Duke, maybe you don't go to Boston U, maybe you go to the regional state public university because this is why, and this is all we're able to help you.
Michael, that is an excellent, excellent point. I think, again, goes back to, as parents, we want to offer our children as much as we can. And again, to Chris's point, to sometimes the detriment of our own financial situations. I try to give advice that as your children are considering college, you absolutely set parameters. This is what we can afford.
So you have to treat that a bit as an investment.
You have to. It is actually, that's a very good point. It is an investment. But it's also with a strategic eye to the future. How much can you afford? What are you going to make? And then how is that going to impact what I'm trying to do with our retirement so that I don't have to come and live with you when I'm 70 years old?
Yeah, for too long. And part of the issue also is that the expectation has always been, and this is what many of us baby boomers grew up with, that we're going to go to high school and then go to college for 4 years and get some kind of job in, you know, in a big building somewhere. And the reason you can't get anyone to come and do your plumbing, do your, you know, do the wiring for you or do carpentry work is because those professions, those trades, somehow became less desirable, when in fact, you can make a lot of money. If you watch my hero, Norm Abrams, now on This Old House, they're focusing a lot on things that are practical, that pay a lot of money.
Yeah, so that's part of the conversation as well. We've done some shows about, in fact, just this week, we had a lot of construction representatives on talking about how do we raise opportunities for younger people to understand that there's good work and less expensive education requirements. But we're talking about sitting down a 17 or 18-year-old person who has these dreams of going to this place and then afterwards doing this thing. And not only are you addressing this from a financial point of view, but you might be cutting someone's dreams off at the legs. And so that's kind of I imagine that must be a difficult conversation to have.
Oh, without a doubt. That would be a very difficult. Now, hopefully, it is your child. So you have some idea of what they're doing through high school and what they're thinking about. And again, easier said than done, but kind of monitoring where they're going and assessing maybe what their true skill set or what their true potential is. Because there's lots of things that you just don't need to go to college for, to Chris's point. And some children just don't do well in college. So I think it's not helicoptering, but at least keeping track of where your child's progression is going and what they're thinking about doing. You know, if you have a child that's struggling in school, but they want to be a brain surgeon, you might want to have some conversations about that and what that means to them.
Yeah, and especially what it does to moms and dads who are trying to retire or who have retired. The numbers are staggering. According to Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, and Pew Research and the College Board, these are all surveys, parents spent twice as much on their adult children than what they contributed to their nest eggs.
And that number is like 500 million or billion?
Billion.
500 billion yeah. to their children and only 250 into their retirement.
Yeah.
That's
more,
a problem.
Yeah. More seniors are in debt. 70% of 65 to 74-year-olds now hold debt. That's up from 50% about 30 years ago. The cost of parental love. What percentage of parents do you think are willing to pull money out of their retirement savings to help their adult children? It's 50%.
And that's an expensive distribution because you have to pay tax on that.
43% are willing to live less comfortably. And yet, actually 8% are willing to come back out of retirement, come off the bench and go back to work.
All to assist their kids.
To help their adult children.
To help their adult children.
Well, so when someone takes out a loan, a student loan, for example, there are terms. This is how long you have to pay it back. This is what the interest rate is. These are the types of talks we can have if you need to take some time off from payments. How should parents structure this situation when they're paying back or lending money to their kids or taking care of these costs? Should they set parameters like a bank would?
Absolutely. And again, easier for us to say than it is to be done. But what you're doing if you don't have those conversations with your child as they're making college decisions and then thinking about the debt that it's going to create is they're going to have to carry this burden for a pretty long time. A lot of these student loans are like mortgages. So they graduate at the age of 24 and they have debt for the next 20 or 30 years. So if you're thinking about the welfare of your child, that is an immediate concern. Is I don't want to saddle you with so much debt that you can't do anything else and you end up living on my couch. So it's an incredibly important conversation. And it helps to start teaching that child how to think about budgeting and financing and long-term goals. Those are really critically important things that they need to be thinking about.
How do you do an appropriate cost-benefit analysis when you factor in, well, here's the school I'm going to go to, here's the program that I'm in, these are the professional opportunities that will come afterwards. How do you plan for that in this context?
You take all of those numbers into account. It's like anything else. What is this going to cost? What is my interest rate going to be? What am I possibly going to be able to earn when I graduate? So not the top end of the salary scale, but when I start out, am I going to be earning a decent amount that I can actually afford to make a loan payment? The great thing about student loans, though, is they do have, at least currently, there are still a lot of excellent payment options in place. You know, there's income repayment. There's if you work at, for instance, if you're a teacher and you go to a school that is less affluent or, you know, I think they're Title IX schools. Anyway, so if you go to one of those schools, you have an opportunity still for a 10-year forgiveness. if you make 120 payments without missing one. So there are some opportunities there, and you need to take that into account also. If my child's going to be a teacher, what's that going to be? What's their loan opportunity going to be? And how long is it going to take them to pay it off?
So let's say your grown child comes to you, or a parent, and says, look, I've got my degree in journalism. There's not any job out there for me right now. I don't have an appropriate sustainable income right now, so I've got to move back home. These loans are due. I'm going to need some help with that. What's the smart thing to do?
I think you got to help them. You got to help them. But you also, it's important to help them in the right way. In other words, you don't want to help them just stay at home and figure out how to use the remote control. You want to help them, especially encourage them to continue to get their resume out, to look for jobs, to find something, because they have to be reminded that mom and dad aren't going to be around forever.
And I think another important step is sitting down with that child who has come to you with basically a business case. This is what I'm asking. This is the help that I need. So you reply as a response to the business case. Here's how long. Here's how much I'm going to help you. Here's what you have to contribute. And if you can't get a job, then you have to contribute in other ways. And here's the end date. Now, obviously, there must be some flexibility here. But, you know, to Chris's point, this could go on for a really long time. And so I think setting up that agreement in advance, and actually it's you know, it might sound harsh, but it might be a good idea to put that agreement into writing. Where it says, okay, I can do this for 3 years. This is what you're going to offer. This is what I have to do. And touch base every 6 months or so and see how things are going. Just like a contractual relationship.
Yeah. And I think it's one thing when you have, when we see clients who have kids who are trying, who come to them with a business opportunity or come to them and they just need help, but you can tell they're out there trying. That's one thing. Sometimes they're not as successful and sometimes they don't want to try. And that's when mom and dad need to set up, address this in the estate plan, because if someone doesn't want to work and is never going to handle money, then the worst thing you can do when you pass away is to leave them a pot of money because it'll be gone.
In our final minute and a half here, let's think about parents who did savings in order to help their children. Now their children are on their feet. What can people who are retired and have dipped into those savings, what's the best approach to rebuilding that?
I would say, and I think Chris would agree with me, I think the very first step is to sit down with a financial planning professional. Where am I? How much money do I have? When do I want to retire? What can I afford to do in retirement? How do I save more? That is a critical step.
Yeah. There are lots of tools available for do-it-yourselfers, but it's you know, frequently you might help to have a professional look at the numbers and say, okay, if you cut your income by X amount, here's what you can expect to do, or take on a little more risk, and this is what you would expect over the long run, but you just can't wing it. You can't.
And then at what point do these younger people who have now gotten out of this problem, thanks to the assist from their parents, do they need to start planning for their own retirement?
Immediately.
Yesterday.
Immediately.
Well, what's the first step? Quickly, 30 seconds.
401k, where they work. Mm-hmm. Save until it hurts. If they have a job where there's a 401k plan, do it. Get the company matched. Don't turn away free money.
Get as close to the maximum contribution, which this year is $19,000. As close to that as you can.
We appreciate your advice very much. I'm very grateful to my parents for paying that college tuition for me and letting me move back twice as an adult. And now here I am sitting with you fine people. So how about that? I want to thank Bartlett Wealth Advisors, Laura Humphrey, and Wells Fargo Financial Advisor, Chris DeSimio. Thank you both for being here and talking to us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. You can find archives of our program online at wvxu.org. I'm Michael Monks.